This summer, the very first time I preached here, the first Sunday of July, were some of you here that day? On that first Sunday, I told you about a dream I had many years ago. I don't know if you'll remember that. I told you about a dream I had about a long table stretched out in the middle of the street in our East St. Paul neighborhood where we lived at that time. And the table was stretching all the way down the length of the street, and all the neighbors were sitting around the table. All the neighbors from East St. Paul, they were black and white and Hmong and Hispanic. They were young and old, blue collar and white collar. And all of us together were around the table sharing a meal together. And there was laughing and conversation, and the kids were playing together. And in my dream, I believe I was seeing a vision of heaven. And I told you that first Sunday, those that were here, I told you that I believed that also that dream was really the moment when I understood that God was calling me into ordained ministry. It was still a few years before I agreed to those conditions, but I know that dream was a moment for me when I knew that God was calling me to be someone who invites people to the feast, to be someone who builds tables and extends tables, to invite people to dinner, to share the abundance of God's love, and to equip and empower other people to do the same thing. So that was a dream I had many years ago. Today, I want to tell you about what happened just a few weeks before I had that dream. It was the summer of 2012. Our daughter, Stella, was not quite 2 years old. Our son Harris was only a few months old, having just been born that April. And in June of 2012, a terrible storm swept through the east side of St. Paul. You know the kind of storm I'm talking about that everyone in the neighborhood will be talking about for years. It just wiped out everything, the wind and the rain and the storms, and they were loud, and it was in the middle of the night, and it was so hot, and they left just utter destruction in our neighborhood, trees down, the power out, everybody with big messes to clean up. It was a huge storm, and we were not spared. Our own backyard suffered a terrible loss where we once had a proud, huge standing willow tree until that night in June of 2012. When the tree came down, it came down in that storm with the loudest crash I've ever heard in my life. At about 4 o'clock in the morning, that tree came down. Thankfully, the tree fell away from the house into the yard. If the tree had fallen toward the house, we wouldn't be here to tell you the story about what happened. It still gives me a stomach ache to think about Harris, baby Harris, sleeping in his bassinet right underneath our window, where the tree would have come right through if it had fallen the other direction. But the tree fell away from the house. It fell into our backyard, and you can see in the picture what our backyard looked like the next morning after the tree fell down. That's our shed that was in our backyard in East St. Paul in the picture, and then that house behind it is our neighbor's house that we shared a backyard with. You can see that our shed was perfectly fine. That's a John Warner handiwork, right? He builds things that are sturdy. So our shed, I know I'm talking about him for another sermon. Pray for me. He built that shed, and the Warners don't do things halfway. So our shed was sturdy and stable, and it survived the storm with no damage. But behind our shed, between the shed and the other house that you can see in the picture, right underneath where the big trunk of the tree is, that's where our neighbor's shed used to be. And our neighbor's chain link fence used to be right there. So we did not sustain any damage from the storm other than a mess to clean up. But our neighbors sustained damage to their fence and to their shed from our tree that fell into their yard. For a few days after the storm passed, we were just overwhelmed with the mess and the work that had to be done. And by we, I mean John was overwhelmed by the mess and the work that had to be done. There was a lot of chainsawing and cleaning up and trips in the pickup truck to the compost, just trying to clean up the debris. And we didn't have power for several days, so we were trying to take care of two small children in a very hot house without electricity. So we were kind of in survival mode for a few days. We didn't even see our neighbors during the first few days, let alone have a chance to talk with them. We didn't know them very well, the neighbors who lived in that house. And I guess we might as well just be honest with each other, right? We were nervous to talk with them because we didn't know what they were going to say or what they were going to expect from us with regard to the damage that had been done to their property. In fact, I called our insurance company to talk about what had happened in the storm, and we clarified that we did not have any damage. We didn't need to make an insurance claim. And our insurance agent specifically told me we should not, under any circumstances, discuss this with the neighbors. We should not talk to them about it because the damage that's done on their property is for their insurance company to deal with. And anything we say that might sound like an apology could make us somehow muddy the waters on who's responsible for what damage. So he was very clear with me that we should not talk to the neighbors about the damage or the tree. So we did, over the next several weeks, what any good, compassionate Christian neighbors would do. We hid. We avoided our neighbors. We lived like fugitives in our own home. We memorized their schedules so that we wouldn't be traveling past each other at the same times. We were guilt-ridden about the damage that had been done to them, and inside ourselves, we wanted to talk to them about it. We wanted to apologize. We wanted to help, especially, you know, John, he said, I can help them fix that shed. I have a tool that can pull the fence back up the way it's supposed to be. I said, don't do it. The insurance company said, don't do it. So we, concerned with legalities and liabilities, said nothing to our neighbors for weeks. We didn't wave. We did not say hello. We did not pass by in the driveways. And for those weeks, I lived with a constant, pervasive knot of anxiety in my stomach, knowing at some point this was all going to come to a head, and it was going to be really bad. I was anxious because I made some assumptions. I knew that our neighbors would be angry about the damage that had been done to their property, and I knew they would expect us to pay for it because it was our tree that fell on their property. And with two small children at home and a mortgage to pay, we couldn't afford to pay the damages that they might have sustained. So I was carrying this anxiety about what I knew would happen. And since we're being honest with each other today, probably I felt anxious because if the tables had been turned and it had been their tree that fell in our yard, I have a feeling we would have been angry. We would have expected them to pay for the damages done to our property. We would have demanded that they make right what had gone wrong. See, we only expected the worst from our neighbors because we recognized the worst of our own selves and projected it onto them. Our behavior hiding out from our neighbors said a lot more about us and our own sinfulness, really. Our own greed, our own pride, our own fear. Said a lot more about that than it said about our neighbors. We didn't even give them a chance to speak for themselves. So for weeks we lived caught in this web of our own fear, our own anxiety, our own sinfulness, hiding from our neighbors, waiting to be discovered. I mean, every time the doorbell rang, we jumped out of our skin. And it was awful. Then one afternoon, while John was out in the backyard loading yet another pickup truck load of debris to take to the neighborhood compost, he was caught off guard by a greeting shouted across the fence. We thought we knew they wouldn't be home at that time of day. I was in the house taking care of Harris, and I heard through the open window the greeting yelled across the fence, and I ran to the window so that I could listen to what was being said in the yard. The neighbor came over right to the damaged part of the fence and said hello to John. They stood and talked for a few minutes, and I strained to overhear their conversation. But in that moment, standing face to face with the neighbor, all those stern warnings from the insurance company and all my instructions to John went out the window. In that moment, standing face to face with the neighbor, John did all the things we weren't supposed to do. Apologized for the damage to their property, offered to help them with the repairs in whatever way he could. John let go of all that pride and selfishness that we had been storing up for weeks, just like that. I'm the pastor. He's the one who gets this stuff right way more often. John led the way for us to repent of our own bad behavior for the last few weeks. And even as he did so, I think both of us were tense because we were waiting for what was going to come after that moment when he apologized and offered to help. There would be yelling, there would be blame, expectation of payment for damages, maybe even a lawsuit. You know how this stuff goes. The man looked at John across the fence, our neighbor. He smiled. He waved his hand across his face like this, and he said, "It's just a shed. Did anybody at your house get hurt in the storm?" It's just a shed. Still get emotional when I think about that moment. It may not seem like a big deal to all of you, but those four words have stayed with me all these years. It's just a shed. They were for us that day like the grace of God being poured out over our weary, sin-sick spirits. All the anxiety and fear and waywardness that we had been hoarding up for weeks just released in that moment. Our priorities had been so wrong, so misdirected, and in four words, that neighbor opened our hearts to God's grace and to the fact that in our hiding out from the neighbors, we were also hiding out from the grace that was waiting for us. If we had only had that conversation the day after the storm, imagine how differently our summer would have felt to us. You see, sometimes in our lives, we wander in big ways. We get way off track. We make really poor decisions, and our lives get off course in dramatic fashion because of the consequences of those decisions and behaviors. But other times, I think more often, we simply give in, like John and I did that summer, bit by bit, just a little bit at a time to sin that creeps in to our hearts from the edges of our life experience and slowly replaces our hope with fear, our joy with cynicism, our kindness with suspicion, our generosity with greed, just sneaking in there to our hearts a little bit by little bit. And we find one day we look up and we're so far from home that we don't know how we got there. But on that day, we were reminded that as tempted to wander as we may be, there is no wandering beyond the reach of God's grace. This is the first lesson on grace that we find in the parable of the prodigal son, that we are human, prone to wander, prone to be tempted, to stray off course, and because God desires a real meaningful relationship with us that's reciprocal and not one that we've been forced into, God gives us the freedom to wander. And boy, do we take it, don't we? We wander in small ways and in big ways. But as we wander, and no matter how far off course we find ourselves, we are never beyond the reach of God's grace. When we say that grace is prevenient, that fantastic $5 Methodist word, what we mean is that it goes before. This grace is free, abundant, universal, and ever present. Wherever God is, there is grace. And where is God? Everywhere. And wherever God is, there is grace. We are often not attuned to it. Not looking for it, not paying attention to it, not aware of it or able to understand it. We often push it aside because we figure we can do it on our own. is what the younger son did in the story, right? When Jesus tells the parable of the prodigal son, this is what he did. He was sure he could do it on his own. He didn't need to stay home with his father and his brother. He didn't need to fulfill his responsibilities there. He knew that there was a life waiting for him that he could tackle all by himself. And so he set off to discover his own future. It didn't go very well for him, did it? But guess what he found out? Even as bad as it got, as far as he wandered, as low as it became, he didn't have the power to erase grace, and neither do we. Wherever God is, there is grace. Occasionally we experience it in a very powerful way that stops us in our tracks. Has anybody ever had that moment? When you just experience it so powerfully, you'll never forget that moment when you knew God was with you, when something dramatic happened or changed, and you knew there was only the only way it could have happened that way is because of God's grace. But more often in our day-to-day lives, it's really subtle. It looks like a flickering sense of peace in the midst of a tragedy or a crisis in your life. Just that 10 seconds when you took a deep breath and felt okay, when everything around you was falling apart. It looks like a word of kindness spoken to you when you are in a moment of deep despair internally that the person who spoke to you could not have known about. But that word of kindness comforts you in your despair. It looks like the opportunity to right a wrong or seek forgiveness when we have caused harm to someone. It looks like the realization that there's a different way to live than being caught up in our own stuff, in our own wants. We see this subtle, prevenient grace of God in the story of the prodigal son, who had taken his father's inheritance before it was rightfully his and then squandered it. That's the prodigal part, right? He was wasteful with his father's hard-earned inheritance. His sense of adventure commingled with his sense of entitlement led him to wandering, and he lost it all. He lost his money, his dignity, and his sense of self. But we soon learn that God's prevenient grace was already at work all around him and within his own heart when at his lowest moment, when he hits rock bottom, what does he do? What does he do? He goes home. In his rock bottom moment when all is lost and he has failed at the grand adventure he thought he would take on, it occurs to him that he could go home. What would spark that thought in him? What would spark the idea that after everything he's done to abandon his family, that he could go home? What inclines him to seek out the very person he has walked away from to be the person who can restore him to wholeness of life? It could have been the stench of the pigs. It might have just gotten so bad that it was worth anything to get away from. But more likely, it was grace, prevenient grace, at work in his life, at work in his heart, in his own spirit, before he could understand or explain it. This prevenient grace that would put that thought in his mind, go home, and send him on the path back to his father. So in the days ahead, may your soul be attuned to grace. May you notice the subtle ways God is already at work in you and through you to give you hope and to invite you to provide hope to your community. May you receive the gift of God's grace, whether it comes to you in the words of a neighbor, it's just a shed, or whether it comes wafting on the breeze that stinks of pigs, or whether it appears to you in some yet unforeseen person or place or experience. When you recognize this grace, may you find yourself wandering back home. And when you encounter another wandering soul, may you be grace to that person, the one who offers those words, that posture of forgiveness and hope, that lifeline to someone who desperately needs to know that they are loved. To close, I want to share with you a poem. This is a poem I wrote many, many years ago after a period of wandering in my own life Am I the only one here who's had one of those? Had some times of wandering in your life? I wrote this once when I was coming back home. And then I turned around to find Grace sitting patiently, singing my name, calling me in the most familiar tune I had never heard. I smiled, and Grace, she returned the smile so brightly that I felt the sun warming my skin, drawing me closer. For a moment, I wavered. "Where have you been?" I challenged. But Grace, so patient and wise, reached out, drew me in, and held fast through my tears. Was it moments or hours or years? I can't remember now. But when my tears slowed, I lifted my head from the shoulder of Grace. Grace brushed my damp hair away from my eyes, kissed my forehead gently, and whispered, "Here. I've been here with you all along." Amen.